if you've ever been around older country folks, mm-hmm. they think when you don't understand something, if they speak louder, yep. you understand better. My dad would like to have some ice in his drink. They poured tea. It melted the tea. He's upset. He needs a little bit more ice. Not upset, but he, you know, it's just wants more ice. Waiter comes back, and he says, ice. Ice. The waiter looked at him and said, okay, I'll get you some ice. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Hey Now Bound Podcast. I'm Philip.
I'm Shane.
And I'm Jason.
I'm Drew.
And I'm excited to be here this morning.
We had a grunt moment there for just a minute.
Yeah. This is a Friday morning when we're recording. It's been a little while since we recorded on Friday morning.
Yeah, we had to do all kind of setup, get the light right and all kind of stuff.
But the sunshine's changed a lot since the last time we was in here.
Mm-hmm. That's good. You got it figured out.
Well, I hope so. We'll find out in post-edit. But we're going to get to storytelling. You guys have made a commitment. Got up early to be here in Hayden, Alabama this morning. So, Jason, you said you got the first story.
Yeah, you know, it's good to be in God's country this morning. You know? Had to come out of the big city, out to the country. It's a good, chilly morning. So, you know, being in the country, I always think about language. I've always been really good at language. That's just like my thing. I was always good in English in high school and in college, learning German, Spanish. I could speak it really well. But the one thing I never understood was the language of my own hometown, which is Holly Pond, not too far from Hayden. The people in Holly Pond spoke very clearly, but we speak our own language there that nobody else really understands. So if you've ever been to Cullman County, you know we don't have a Berlin, Germany. We have a Berlin.
Oh, Berlin.
B-E-R-L-I-N. It's Berlin.
Uh-huh.
We don't have a, we don't have Cullman spelled with a K like it would be in Germany. It's spelled with a C because we changed all that. Well, there was a few words growing up that I honestly didn't understand, and I actually heard you say one of them a little while ago, which is okra. Yes. I always thought the thing that grew on the stalk that was green was O-K-R-Y.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I grew up a little bit and was around some more cultured people, they started saying okra.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, well, what are you talking about?
What is this?
I don't have a clue what you're talking about. And then there was the word wash, which is apparently has an R in it in Cullman County, wash.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was a lady that worked at, I don't know if you guys have ever heard of Shaw's Catfish. It was a legendary place in Holly Pond. Everybody knew about it. It's closed now. But there was a lady that worked there, and her name was apparently Bunny. Now, for 20 years of my life, I wondered who in the world would name their child B-U-N-N-Y. And finally, after many years, I realized that her name was not, indeed, Bunny.
On the birth certificate.
It was Bonnie.
Bonnie.
With an O.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
I must have Holly Pond roots, okay?
Because yeah, well, I'm over
here.
You
said
this.
All this, and I'm sitting here. I know what it is. I know exactly. That. I could have told you.
You know exactly how it works. So we've got all these words in rural Alabama that nobody in the city understands. They also don't understand when we talk about our euphemisms of sorts. You know, things. You know, like you like a skint hog, or name anything like that. So I think language is one of the funniest things about working in the city and doing what I do, because if you had met me at 17 years old when I worked at Walmart in Cullman, which by itself was a funny thing.
Jason?
Yeah.
That's Walmart's.
Exactly.
And that's back when we had Kmart's too, right?
We did have a Kmart's, and they were right across the street from each other, and both of them got hit by the tornado in 88.
And you can also put an article in front of it. The
Walmart's.
Right. It has to have a definite article. Mm-hmm. Now,
so if we'd have met you while you was working at the Walmarts,
if you'd have met me working at the Walmarts, you would have heard me saying things like Walmarts and Warsh and
Bunny.
Yeah, Bunny. Y'all go down to Shaw's and see Bunny.
Yeah.
And
she'll take care of it.
I realized after a while that we just had our own way of talking in Cullman County. And there's a little bit of it in Blount County. And it's different from place to place, too. Like, you guys know chocolate and biscuits, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, that's... But people in the city don't know chocolate and biscuits.
Chocolate gravy.
They need to know them.
They think it's like... They're like, well, so what do you do? Melt a Hershey bar and pour it over biscuits? No, it's a totally different kind of chocolate. It's a highly refined chocolate that is made of, what, cocoa
much
and
more,
water,
much
right?
Much more in-depth process.
It's got a lot of butter in it. You know, that's
butter,
why,
sugar,
that's
cocoa.
That's why we are the way we are. Yeah. But I think with that language idea, I think about my dad a lot when we were talking about silly things in the studio or whatever. And he still very much talks that way, very slow, very intentional with his words. But there's always a U where there's supposed to be an O, like you're going down to the McDonald's. Mm-hmm. You don't go to McDonald's, you go to the McDonald's. Mm-hmm. And it reminded me of a time that he and I were eating barbecue right after I left to go to college. We were eating at Williams Barbecue in South Cullman. Mm-hmm. And I'm probably 17 at Walmart's. And I'd just gotten off of work at the Walmart's. And,
now he's getting back into it. He's getting a little more Cullman County.
We're sitting there eating down there. And, you know, we had our barbecue, and the waitress was cute. Mm-hmm. Right? You guys.
Yeah, 17.
You know, your dad probably never did anything like this. So my dad,
I'm sure he did. It
my
was Weston County.
Looks at this waitress and looks straight at me, and he says, you know, he orders his food, and he says, and by the way, this is my son in whom I'm well pleased.
Wow. Oh, spot.
So I'm just like.
Trying to get under the table.
King James Version.
Come on, yeah. Oh, no, yeah, that's another thing. Somehow it's Southern King James English. You know, this is my son in whom I'm well pleased. I just look at him, I'm like,
that is awesome.
What are you doing?
He's offering you up as a sacrifice is what he's doing, okay?
Did a dove come down? Yeah.
That was before, she was the dove. Right?
Okay, all right. Okay.
And she fluttered away immediately after that.
I got to go.
Yeah, that was a rough one. But that's the kind of language that we get in rural Alabama, where, you know, your dad looks at a waitress and says, this is my son in whom I'm well pleased.
Yeah, you are you single?
Yeah, yeah. He didn't go that route.
No,
it was just straight King James, and then she was straight out of there.
Before we can't go further, I got to know two things from this story. One, how did she react if you were still looking at this point?
Oh, I was not looking.
So you don't know how she reacted to that statement?
Well, she did deliver our food, but I don't think there were too many words after that, because I think we were both extremely embarrassed. It was not one of those stories that ends up in a Hallmark movie,
right?
You know, this is
that's
not
your wife today.
No.
You did not get wedded in the next summer.
Huh? No, but my wife does know about the story, and she
and a
thinks
lot of
it's
other
hilarious.
People do now,
yeah,
actually.
Yeah.
Yeah, so. She's going to hear it for the second time now. That's right. Second question, where was your dad's heart at for this? I mean, what was he really seeking to achieve?
I think he was really trying hard to get me to get out there, because in spite of the fact that I have a job where I talk all the time, I'm actually a really introverted person. I don't like to put myself out there. I go talk to a box all day, and then I...
So you're talking, but it's not a person,
right?
Per se,
right. I mean, it would just wear me out, and so I was very introverted. And I had had a girlfriend, and we broke up. And Dad, he was just trying to help.
Yeah,
he was trying to help in his own way, and God bless him. It just did not help at all.
Man, you're talking about parents embarrassing you at restaurants and tying it all into. Not having a lot of culture. I mean, we're cultured people.
We have culture. It's just not what the rest of the world.
It's not the rest of the world. When we were 14, 15 years old, a Mexican restaurant here was unheard of.
Mm.
There weren't any.
The only one I knew of was in Centerpoint.
And I think that's where we were. It was like, El Gondo's or something. I don't remember what it was called, but my dad loved it. He had found it working and he loved it. Well, we went and we're sitting there all at the table. And so my dad, being of the same roots as your dad. I'm pretty sure they're similar.
We're all from the same tree in Blount and Coleman County.
He is doing his best to communicate with this Spanish-speaking individual who is taking his order. And if you've ever been around older country folks, they think when you don't understand something, if they speak louder, you understand better. My dad would like to have some ice in his drink. They poured tea. It melted the tea. He's upset. He needs a little bit more ice. Not upset, but he, you know, it's just it's more ice. Waiter comes back, and he says, ice. Ice. And I said, Daddy, I'm pretty sure ice. Can I have some more ice? And the waiter looked at him and said, okay, I'll get you some ice.
But isn't it funny, though? I mean, it's the truth. If you speak louder and slow down, most of the older generation, older population, they'll do that. My dad does that. And it's like, you think they're going to understand a little bit different.
Yeah.
That's a perfect example. And also, too, if you have siblings, I don't know if you guys have siblings or not. So to go along with what we're talking about, my brother's 3 years older than I am, 3 years and 3 days older. And my parents could not take us out to public in a restaurant. Mm-hmm. It was just, we were that bad. You know, both my parents were educators. Jason mentioned about the English language and different things. And my mom was an English teacher. My aunt was an English teacher. I'm married to an English teacher today. And you would think that I would use the right English language all the time, but that doesn't happen. So going back to the story of my brother and I mean, I don't know that it was probably 12, I was 12, he was 15, that they could actually take us out to a restaurant. Mm-hmm. And they were very strict, very disciplined, but I guess we were just...
You're very rebellious. Yeah,
exactly.
And knowing your brother, I don't know why you'd take him out now.
Well, that's a whole other story there. But growing up, my dad grew up in Winston County. And I guess we're all into sports, and I guess you would say he had two nicknames. It was the Haleville Comet and Wayne the Train. He was a big-time running back at Haleville High School. And so hearing the stories, you know, you go back and you hear all the stories of people that played against him, late 60s. I guess today, in today's world, you would have probably coined him a five-star athlete. So big-time running back. Gets a scholarship to go play for Coach Bryant at Alabama. And he's got many of stories about Coach Bryant's days, and all of them are true and been backed up in a lot of different ways. And we know that times then were a little bit different than they are now. So he would talk about Kenny Stabler. And if you've read some books, I think it's called Bryant's Boys, and it talks about it in there, Snake would end up down in Foley and have to have somebody drive him back or whatever, and it'd just be during the middle of the week. And I'll never forget, he'll tell those stories, and he'll talk about, you know, the same people that we grew up on, or there are generations ahead of us that kind of set the standard for sports, and how all that came about. But I've got one sports story. So I've got multiple sports stories. Yeah, I think I'm sports sure has been a big part of our life. But everybody's heard of Carnell Williams. I'm sure, went on to play, was at Etowah High School, went on to play at Auburn University, went on to play at Tampa Bay and in the league for a while. Well, I was a quarterback at Scottsboro High School, and the story gets told a lot, and I don't think everybody puts the real details in it. So we came in, we played Coleman. We beat Coleman the week before. 2 weeks before that, Coleman had beaten Etowah, and this was the first year of region play. And so, I mean, it was in our favor. We had him at home. We're ready. You know, we're prepared. Well, here comes Carnell Williams rolling into town. Mm-hmm. That was a feat in itself. So as I play quarterback, ran the triple option. If people are you go back in time a little bit, was a big time offense back in the day. His job was to make my life miserable. And he did that. He accomplished
succeeded.
That. He did. He succeeded. So his job was to line up at free safety at 8 yards. And if I stepped left, he went left. If I stepped right, he went right. He was to mirror me all game long. Let me tell you, it was a long game. Because usually, if I got through the line of scrimmage, you know, we were going to get some yardage. 1 yard, 1 yard. There he is, tackling me right at the line of scrimmage. Well, third play of the game, our split end's name's Nathan, comes down and crack block. Of course, today, crack block's illegal. You can't do that. You know how they've changed the game a little bit for safety. Well, he comes down to crack Carnell, and he gets a chip of him. So we're off to the races. So we're running down through there, 70 yards, whatever it may be. And they had another player named Donnell Horton, and he was a really, really good player. Well, I look over, and I'm to the point where I see Donnell coming off the side, and I'm like, I'm going to have to do something. I'm going to have to speed up, or I'm going to have to slow down, cut back across the grain. Well, here comes our running back, Don, in between us. So I thought, well, I'm going to have to gear back up again to be able to score. Well, I get to the goal line, which I thought was across the goal line, and somebody comes from behind and is all, I mean, swarming me and knocks the ball out. It's Carnell Williams. He's come from all the way back there. Now, the story is he chipped and didn't knock him down. Everybody says he got knocked down and got back up. Now, let me tell you, I don't know how the referee could have chased us all the way down the field because we were moving pretty good and made that call at the goal line, touchback. And that's changed the whole course of the game. So I'll say this. I mean, being in sports and coaching, playing whatever for a while, by far the best high school player, college player, just player in general, you know, athlete that I've been around. But the story always gets told that, no, he fell down and he got back up and caught you. That wasn't the whole story. But that's a claim to fame. And I said, look, if that's my biggest claim to fame, that's pretty good because he was a phenomenal athlete and went on to make a great career. So, you know, that was a big part of growing up and big part of sports and just hearing talks about, you know, dads and just hearing the language, you know, difference in language and go back to Winston County and it really is. It's really fun to think about, and it's really fun when you go out. Of course, they can embarrass you a lot of times, just like Jason mentioned just a minute ago. So, but those are some fond memories growing up and incorporating sports into the whole childhood.
Winston County is legitimately a state of its own.
Sure.
I mean, it is its own arena.
Free state
of Winston. That's exactly right.
they did try.
Exactly. Is it not the free state of Winston?
It is the free state of Winston. If I get close to it, that's the first thought that comes to mind.
Tag number is what?
I'm in free state of Winston, 67.
60, last
the
county.
The last county in the alphabetical order in the state of Alabama.
It's not totally alphabetical order. The first three.
Five
or
first
what?
Three.
Population.
Yeah, but see, those were population when that was
And that was set. And it's wrong now.
Because Madison County wants one now, but Birmingham's not giving it up. There's this constant fight between Birmingham and Huntsville people over this, because I've lived in both places in the last 10 years. And in Huntsville, everybody says, well, we're the biggest city. And in Birmingham, they say, well, we're the biggest metro area. Which is true. You got Jefferson, Shelby, St. Clair County all together.
Even some Blount.
Yeah, even part of Blount. Mm-hmm. We have about 1.5 million people. In the Huntsville metro, it's about 750,000. So there's a constant battle over that one.
Who's number one? It's always number one. And you're in the state of Alabama. I mean, it comes down to sports, and everybody thinks who's number one all the time. But
I'm going to tell you who ain't going to win number one on that. It's Hayden, Alabama ain't going to win the population.
Are you in trouble? Well, we hope you're not. But just in case you are, we know a good lawyer. Whitney Island here in Hayden, Alabama has law services. Or maybe if you're not from Hayden, I'm sure she'd be happy to hear from you. So check her out at islandlaw.com. We appreciate Whitney and her sponsoring the show.
Well, who's got the next story for us?
Well, I'll take it. So fishermen, you know, I'm sure I've heard in the past that pretty avid outdoorsmen. So the one that got away. Well, we all have them.
This is a lie, right?
We all have them. you know, fishermen do lie. That's the qualification to become a fisherman, I guess.
Well, you're not lying. You just don't know exactly how big it was, right?
Well,
was,
the younger you were, the bigger it was.
The bigger it was. There you go.
No, so we had a FFA tournament that was big on Lake Gunnersville for a while. And so a friend of mine, Trey, was fishing with us and my dad. And, you know, the staple is you don't go fish a brand new boat dock. You go to the older boat docks. You go to the ones that are dilapidated or falling down because they have more structure and they've been there a while and the new fish have been there. So there was this one little red boat dock that stood kind of out a little bit, came out a little bit further than all the old ones. And you're not thinking about going up. All you've heard all your life is, you know, here I am 10 years old. You don't fish the new ones, you fish the old ones. So we're going up through there, and if my memory is correct, it was a watermelon blue Zoom Lizard, Texas rig. You can't go wrong. Well, we get to the front left post of that new boathouse, and I'm sitting there, and it wasn't one of those, you know, just obvious bites. It was just a sluggish, just real heavy feel on the line, and I thought, yeah, I'm not even really going to set the hook because I don't want to set the hook on a rope or something that may be a tree that's down there. I wish I'd have set the hook because I look over and that fish is coming up on its side. Now, small fish don't come up on their side. And in my mind, it's a 10-pounder.
It's a 10-pounder.
It was big. I'm talking about, you know, when they come up, I mean, the eyes are as big as this microphone right here. And your eyes are bigger than that. So I didn't set the hook, and I'm just stunned. Like, I'm looking at the fish, and I can't do anything about it. You could see the lizard sitting out in the hook in the front part of the mouth, and it's turned up on its side. And I did see it. I saw it as it swam, and that hook came flying out of that mouth. Oh, man. And here I am, 10 years old, thinking, that's by far the biggest fish I've ever had. The one that got away is always, it's always stuck in my mind.
Well, Jason, we've been telling some ones that got away story. You said you had another one. What you got?
Well, I'm about the one that I actually caught.
Ooh.
And this is not a fishing story. This is just an accidental ministry kind of story. My wife was the preschool director at Whitesburg Baptist up in Huntsville for several years, and so by default, I was also the preschool director at Whitesburg Baptist Church because you're the workhorse when that happens. So I never really thought about being in children's ministry myself, but a few years ago, when we moved from Huntsville to Birmingham, we started going to Valleydale Church, which was our home church that we had left years ago when we went to Huntsville, so we've just kind of volleyed back and forth. I've got three kids, and they're all in children's ministry now. None of them are in preschool anymore. My wife's no longer the preschool director, so, you know, I'm going to go to Sunday school now for the first time in years and sit under somebody who's actually teaching. Well, that lasted about 6 months before I ended up in children's ministry myself quite by accident. It started about 2 years ago. It was March of 2023, and I was going to hear one of my best friends preach in view of a call up at Pine Grove Church in Cherokee County, just east of Center, right off Weiss Lake. Beautiful, beautiful area. And so I took my then fifth grader with me because he always liked to go and hear other people preach. And he's always been really attentive in church. So he and I take off and we go and we stop and get us a donut in Gadsden. And we're going up through there. Well, all the while, we have no idea what's going on at Valleydale that morning. We go and listen to my friend and he does a great job. And then we all go eat lunch afterward. Well, I get back about 5 o'clock that Sunday evening. We've been gone all day. And I start hearing, did you hear what happened at church this morning? I was like, no, what happened? Well, apparently, the fifth graders, which was boys and girls together, they had a co-ed class, somehow sent the teacher out crying. Oh, boy. No, I still don't know exactly what happened. The boys claimed it was the girls. The girls claimed it was the boys. So the very next week, I'm teaching the boys. Now, I've never taught children's ministry before, but we had a great headmaster at the school that the kids were at in Huntsville, at Whitesburg Academy, and he always used to say, if you raise the bar, the kids will rise to it. So I said, you know what? I'm going to teach these kids like they're adults. So we're in, I think, we started out in Exodus and Leviticus, and moving on toward Deuteronomy, and we're talking about the conquest of Canaan and all these things. And I just start laying it out for them, like, okay, this is really what happened. This is how these things happened, giving them historical stuff, and they're just eating it up. I mean, I've got like 10 to 15 boys every Sunday, and they're just eating it up. And I start watching them grow, and they're doing great things, and they're asking great questions. And I always said, what I want you to come out of this is asking why. Why did it have to be this way? Why did God do it this way? Why did the Israelites have to go this route or that route? Or what does this mean? Where do you see Jesus in this story? So they start asking questions. They're answering questions. They're growing. And I'm like, okay, well, I'll sign up for another tour of duty of this. This is great. So the next year, my daughter comes up into fifth grade, and I'm getting a little full of myself because I'm like, I'm pretty good fifth grade teacher. I'm doing all right here.
Got this thing figured out.
Hey, you know, and that's the moment that things start to go awry every time when you think you've got it. So we get all the way through the first semester through Christmas, and man, we're doing a great job. We're trying to bring these kids up to the bar, raise the bar so that they'll come up to it. So then the Super Bowl happened that year, and that was the year that the He Gets Us commercials were all over the place. And there's, of course, controversy about whether you like them, whether you don't like them. Not here to pass judgment on it. So I wanted to show them how you can take something that's already got a good message and make it a more accurate message about what the gospel really is. So I showed them an alternative video in Sunday school the next week, and I said, look, this is what Jesus really does. And this video didn't have anything bad in it. It didn't have any bad pictures. The intention of it was all wholesome. But in raising the bar for these kids, there were words on the screens that they didn't really understand. And they were things that you don't want to be involved in. And one of those things happened to involve the film industry. Mm-hmm. We'll leave it at that. And the next Wednesday, I got a phone call from the children's minister asking if I showed a video that had a particular word in it, because the parent was wondering how their child learned about this word in fifth grade Sunday school.
Well, good grief, man.
Now, to my credit here, I'll defend myself. I didn't tell them what it was. So I thought everybody probably already knew. But, you know, you've got your public school kids like my ruffians who probably already know. And then you've got private school, and then you've got homeschool who they may have never conceived of it. So I learned a really valuable lesson. Always let your children's minister see the YouTube video that you're going to show fifth graders before you show it.
It'll save you a phone call and a lot of nausea.
It hurt my heart, too. Mm-hmm. Like, I thought after that, I really got to think and pray about this to make sure that I'm not doing damage.
Yeah.
I need to evaluate where I am. I said, I'm not quitting on you, but I really need to evaluate this because it hurt me that I may have caused a stumble, which, you know, as I've watched them grow since then, it didn't cause them to stumble. They're still there. They're still growing. They're still doing good. Well, but you never want to do that.
And it's not so much a stumble. A wise man told me, and this is, I'm going to give credit to Mr. Neil Grimes. He said, you protect them children as long as you possibly can, because once they learn something, they cannot unlearn that thing. And you, like you said, you didn't cause them to stumble. You just caused them to learn something earlier than what maybe mom or dad didn't necessarily want.
And I wouldn't want that either, but in my
preparation,
in my haste to to show them something that, hey, look, this is a real life picture of what the gospel does. Yeah. It takes this person and it turns them into this person.
Yeah.
I showed them a little too much of what real life is like.
You just took them from fifth grade to 10th grade real quick.
Well,
yeah.
Well, actually, maybe freshman college. Yeah.
Well, your heart was in the right place.
Yeah. So. Yeah.
And the kids pick up on more than we ever realize.
Yes.
They pick up on everything but what you want them to pick up on.
That's exactly right.
That was just a word on a screen. Yeah. That's all it was.
Yeah. Drew, tell me another story. So I know most of my stories seem to be about my dad, which has been an awesome, incredible influence and just a great, great man. But this happened to deal with my mom and my dad. So my mom had never flown, never, ever. So I was probably 9, brother was probably 12. So mom's first flight was to Hawaii.
layover in California, across the Pacific to Hawaii.
I'm going to do it right if I'm going to do it.
I guess that was the thought process because, you know, I'm not big on, I'll fly, but I'm not big on flying, and I'm surely not going to make that long trip my first flight.
Well, you ain't going to drive it, so you won't, no. If you're going to get to Hawaii.
If you get the full experience, you got to fly, right? So she flies and gets to California, and basically they get to California and calls Dad, and she's like, I'm not going any further. He's like, well, I'm not driving to California to pick you up. You're going to have to go on the trip. She's on the trip with her siblings, with her sisters. So in the meantime, I don't know how many of your dads were very good cooks, but my dad is not a good cook.
No. Mine either.
At all, no. Period. So for dinner the first night, we were McDonald's folks, and that's where we went in times of need when he was cooking. So one night, he had hot dogs. Okay, that's good. But not only did he cook hot dogs, he had veg-all, which everybody knows what veg-all is, and whole potatoes. But instead of getting three different pots, because he knew he was going to have to wash three different pots, he puts the hot dogs and the veg-all and the whole potatoes in the same pot and called it dinner. Well, after the second night of that, we're going to McDonald's. There's the backup. We can't do this again. But in the meantime, on that same time period, I don't know, you know, we grew up in Jackson County, in Scottsboro, and we had our share of little trouble. And so we thought it was a great idea. It was around July 4th. We thought it was a great idea. We're going to have bottle rocket wars with our neighbors. We grew up in a great neighborhood, a lot of kids. Ages were similar. We had a lot of friends. We had so many memories, and one of those deals where you didn't come home until the porch light came on, and you knew it was time to come inside. We stayed outside all the time. Well, we couldn't wait for it to get dark that night because we had manufactured our bottle rocket PVC pipes. We had camouflage on. We had dark colors on. You know, there was two sides of the ditch here. Main road comes up. Half of our neighborhood was over on this side. Half our neighborhood was over here on this side. So in the midst of that, it's on. You know, like, hey, I'm not trying to hurt you, but I want to win, and we're going to compete. You know, we were all competitors. Well, it was all good and fun until a spark got on my sweatpants. And at that point, I'm sitting there looking down, and somebody even has to tell me beforehand, hey, your sweatpants are on fire. So I'm in the middle of a battle here. You know, I'm not going to stop and put my sweatpants out. But fortunately, I did. The old stop, drop, and roll. And so what the funny thing was, when we came back inside, Dad said, well, your mom called to check on y'all and wanted to talk, but I didn't come out there and get you. And I said, well, what did you tell her? And said, I told her that y'all were outside having a bottle rocket war. And my parents were, my mom especially, was really strict. So you could imagine, she's all the way in Hawaii, which she was already weirded out about that. And the fact that her two sons are out there with the neighborhood having a bottle rocket war.
Full of veg-all hot dogs.
Full of veg-all hot dogs, whole potatoes. I'm telling y'all, there is not anything in this world that I've had that bad since, or probably will ever be that bad. But the mindset was, I've got to clean three dishes up. So it comes in. Of course, he tells her what we had for dinner, and I'm sure she was excited about that. And then also the fact that, hey, we're outside, and we got faces painted up. I mean, we're serious here. And, you know, to this day, we never let him live that down. And to this day, we don't let him cook either. Mm-hmm. And so lives by himself now, and he doesn't cook. But what's funny is how times have changed. And my brother and I live, you know, within probably a quarter of a mile of each other. And he'll call one of us and figure out which one's having the best dinner that night.
My man.
Yeah. Yeah. He's got it figured out. He'll call and it comes up on your phone. And you're like, all right, it's getting close to dinner time here. And he'll call my brother and figure out what they're having. He'll call us, figure out what we're having. And whatever he feels like having that night, that's where he's going to end up. But he does not need to be on his own cooking. I can tell you that. So those were stories and of course memories too that you never will forget.
A solid core memory you just told me. Yeah. I mean, I just went back to the neighborhood I just found another man in this life that has a heart like mine. When he said one dish is all I'm washing, I said, amen. I understand that. I know why that man put all those in there, but I've never heard of anything cooked in hot dog broth. And I can't see anything, you know, that's why they don't sell that.
It was
chicken broth, vegetable broth. You ain't gonna find no hot dog broth.
Was it at least like ballpark?
No.
It was the pink ones,
no,
huh?
It was pink ones.
Oh, man.
The red ones? You think it was the red ones?
Yeah, I could tell you it was probably the cheapest thing. It was at that grocery store.
You want to see Philip get sick?
My hot dog has a first name. It's O-S-C-A-R. You remember that one?
I mean, that's a taste you'll never forget.
No.
You ate it?
Oh, yeah. Because it was either
wartime, baby.
Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah.
You got it. It was
an act of Congress just to get him to go to McDonald's. Mm. You know? I mean, it wasn't like, you know, I guess fast food today where you've got it on every corner and that's just what you do all the time, unfortunately.
Let me tell you, your daddy's a man after my own heart, though, because you know who I call in the afternoons? I call my wife and my mama. See, what's for supper?
Yeah. Yeah, he's got it figured out.
See, mama's cooking. Okay, well. See what my wife's got cooked. Mm-hmm. Let's see where we're going to eat now. Mm.
If you're thinking about selling your timber, I know a guy. When Andrew Laughlin called me, I quickly realized that his main concerns were standing by people's side and helping them avoid regret when making a once-in-a-lifetime decision. Andrew is a small-town Alabama guy, family man, and second-generation forester. Laughlin Forest Management specializes in timber sales, management plans, reforestation, and all things private land management. Do not let that log skidder near your property before you give Andrew a call at 334-804-7490.
Jason, you got us another one?
Yeah, you know, recently, you're talking about things in jars. Recently, my son, who is in 7th grade at Oak Mountain Middle School down in Shelby County, was supposed to do a science project for the science fair. Now, in 7th grade in Alabama, you do life science. And life science is not my forte. I'm a physical science, earth science, physics, astronomy, some biology, but that's just not my thing. This child decided on his own that his science project was going to be, and this is something that you three will appreciate, do fish like big worms? Or small worms better?
There we go.
So immediately, you know, face palm, son, how are you going to test this? I mean, I'm a scientist. This is what we do. You know,
we test it.
Yeah. We look at something and we have an idea and we test it. It's called scientific method.
You're not going to pick a fish out of the water and say, fish. Right. Do you like big worms or little worms?
Raise your fin if you
have. Yeah, give me a fin spin.
I am trying to think of every which way to Sunday to test this. So I'm calling, you know, catfish ponds and fish providers. I call people all the way to Montgomery trying to find somebody who could get me some fish that I could put in a 20-gallon tank. And, you know, I had a couple of leads, but everybody's like, well, I don't have any right now. But if I get any, yeah, you can come down and grab one or two. So we went over to this little aquarium store in Hoover. And I thought, well, you know, maybe they have some carnivorous fish that we could at least test to a degree.
Piranha.
So luckily there were no piranha. But they did have some, but you had to grind the worms up. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, we're not doing that. So I said, Walt, how about we go and talk to the teacher and tell her that we just cannot test this at all. We can't test the hypothesis. We went fishing, couldn't catch anything because of the season we're in. It's November. It's windy. Mm-hmm. We're not catching anything. It's just not going to work, especially just on a worm. So I said, you know, in the news, there's been a lot of talk about beef tallow. You know, the McDonald's cooks their fries in seed oil. And we talked a lot about McDonald's today, hadn't we?
We have.
That could be hungry, actually.
Yeah. So McDonald's cooks their fries in seed oil. This was a big news story back in November when Trump was looking at RFK as Health and Human Services Secretary. And I said, well, what if we cooked something in beef tallow and then cooked something in seed oil? Or we cooked something in beef tallow and then just got the McDonald's version of it and we watched to see what happens to them. And he's like, yeah, okay. So he goes and tells his teacher and the teacher's like, I love it. It's a great idea. So in my garage for 2 months sat a McDonald's burger and our burger that we had used beef tallow with instead of seed oil. And every day we'd go out there and look to see what was going on. And the smell continued to grow and grow and grow. Well, finally, nothing's really going on. So I'm like, all right, what do we got to do? So we add water to it and I throw a little yeast in there to see what goes on. And the most unexpected thing to me was that the McDonald's burger broke down faster. I thought the one that was cooked with all the stuff would have just stayed, but that one broke down faster. But of course, it's smelling up the garage and everything. I got these two jars that are sitting there with these burgers in them. They're just staring at me through Christmas. And I'm like, why did I even sign up for this? Well, the child doesn't want to win because he doesn't want to go to the state. He don't want to go to the state science fair. So I get a text message.
I don't want to win, Daddy.
Yeah, he's like, I just want to do well. I don't want to win because I don't want to go to Montgomery. He's like, he's a homebody like me. He doesn't want to go anywhere. So Walt texts me at like 8:30 the morning that they're doing the projects. And he says, I think I'm going to win.
Oh, no.
It turned out he got number 3, which was perfect. That's exactly what he wanted. But when my current sixth grader goes into seventh grade, we definitely will not be doing a food experiment or a fishing worm experiment for the science fair.
So what was the hypothesis? And then what was the conclusion?
Okay, the hypothesis was that the food cooked in beef tallow would break down faster because it's more natural. And the food cooked in the seed oil, because that's a more unnatural way of cooking, it would not break down faster. It would stay more intact, not grow mold as easily. But it turned out the other way. The food cooked with the more natural ingredients did not break down faster. I was surprised. I thought it was going to be the other way around.
I heard a story one time that a guy wore a suit to a wedding. And after the wedding party at the end of it, they went to McDonald's on the way home, and he got multiple cheeseburgers and was just shoving them in his pocket.
This sounds like a real story that someone you know had.
Yeah. And he goes home, and he gets this one, eats this one, eats this one. And by the time he gets there, he hangs his jacket back up. And he's like, you know, us, we don't get in suits very often. So that jacket sits in the closet. By itself. Well, years go by, and I need to wear that jacket out tonight where I'm supposed to go. Puts it in, and it crinkles when he puts it on. I was like, what is that in the pocket? What's that cheeseburger wrapper?
Oh, wow.
Filled with a cheeseburger. He reaches in there and gets it, opens it up, and he said it was just like the night he bought it.
Oh, my goodness.
So I just told you about my oldest son and his science project. Well, my youngest son, Brody, he's 9. He's at the elementary school at Oak Mountain Elementary, and he's our miracle baby. This child, he has been through so much in his life. If he takes his shirt off, he looks like he's been in a knife fight. I mean, the child has been through everything, and his story is one of surprise and of triumph when it comes down to it. When he was born, he was a little early, which was really not that big a deal. It was a big surprise to me, though, because I was just sitting in the bed watching Coach one night, and my wife grabs my arm and says, hey, it's time to go. So we raced to Huntsville Hospital.
It's not time to go yet.
I was watching Coach. I mean, they hadn't won the Screaming Eagles hadn't won the national championship yet. So I was busy with that. And we get to the hospital, and we've got 2 kids already, and we think everything's going to be fine. We're going to be in and out 48 hours. We're home. We're all good. That was not the plan. That was not going to be the plan at all. Brody was early. He had some obvious outward signs of some pretty severe inward trouble. So he was whisked away to the NICU at Huntsville Hospital and quickly transported to Children's of Alabama, where he was going to spend the first month of his life. In the first 4 hours of his life, we learned that he had multiple birth defects, and one of which was a congenital heart defect that was going to kill him if we didn't get to Birmingham quickly. So at 13 days old, he has open heart surgery, heart's the size of a strawberry, arteries are the size of IV lines. They get in there and they fix it. And it's miraculous, but he has 3 surgeries in the first 2 weeks of his life. And as a dad, you're watching this little peanut that you thought you were going to take home, and here he is in a hospital bed, too weak to cry. Well, the first time he cries, it's a miracle. you start to hear his voice and you see those little eyes open and he's breathing on his own and he's doing great. And he starts to grow from there, but we're constantly looking out for that next thing. And he was going to go through 10 surgeries in the first year of his life. Wow. To fix things with his spine and to fix things with his heart and other internal issues. And then a few years later, we noticed that his attitude was kind of souring a little bit. He was angry all the time, always kind of hurting. And then he would have trouble going up the stairs. And he would just put his head down on the stairs. And turned out he was in heart failure again. So here we go, back to Birmingham. And he rode on the helicopter 3 times from Huntsville to Birmingham by ambulance once. I took him once in the car because there were no ambulances. And he ended up having another open heart surgery, was there for several weeks. We didn't know he could jump. We thought that he structurally could not jump. His physical therapist thought, he can't jump, he can't run. Well, after we got his heart fixed, he's jumping down the driveway and running after his brother and sister. I mean, he's a little walking miracle. And I give glory to God for the kinds of care that's available for families now. Because 40 years ago, if I had been him, probably doesn't survive with all the problems that he had. But because of modern medicine and because of the hand of the Lord leading through these doctors, I've got 3 kids today. Mm. And to look at Brody, last night we were at a basketball game, and you know, every time the refs would blow the whistle, he and his little buddy would run out on the court and shoot and then run back into the stands. And you would have no clue that he's been through all this. And he's just a wonder to look at. And Drew, you know, you've got a similar story to that, because we have big connections over just the heart defects themselves.
Yeah. So our son Andrew was born at 20 weeks. We went for an anatomy scan. And it's a real troublesome moment. I mean, we talked about, you know, Jason said, you know, you think everything's going to be perfect the way it always is, and everything's going to go to what your plan is. It's not God's plan. And when at 20 weeks we go for an anatomy scan, and the tech starts at the head, goes to the feet basically, then back and ends with the heart, where the tech steps out. We're sitting there going, okay, something's going on. Something's not right. Comes back in with a doctor and says, basically, you know, your son has a heart defect. I think it's truncus arteriosus. Could it be tetralogy of Fallot? Well, we are in place at UAB. My wife Jody delivers at UAB. Andrew delivers, looks perfectly healthy, perfectly normal. Outwardly, everything looks great. We're in the NICU 4 days. You know, once again, our timing and God's timing are two different things. So we're thinking, and we've been told surgery, open heart surgery, is going to be at 7 days old. The third day, while we're sitting in the NICU at UAB, Dr. Robert Dable, chief surgeon at Children's of Alabama, bebops down the hall over at UAB and finds us and said, hey, we had a cancellation. We're going to surgery tomorrow morning. We're going to transport him from the bridge of UAB into Children's Alabama. We're going into surgery. Of course, immediately you're like, oh, well, wait a minute. You told me 7 days.
I had some time to prepare.
I've got a little bit of time to prepare and to get all of my thought process together, but we're going in 4 days. Like Jason said, the heart the size of a strawberry, a small strawberry. We're not talking about some Maggie Valley big strawberry. We're talking about small ones. Surgery starts. It's going well. And he becomes very, very unstable into surgery. At the course of that, they had to put him on ECMO, which is life support. I can't tell you a whole lot about that day. My wife can't tell you a whole lot about that day. 26 blood transfusions were given to him on that day. Miracles, that's all you can say. It was absolute miracles in the hands of the Lord. And so fast forward there, he 7 days old. We go into the cath lab, and I can vividly remember the day. You have rounds, and Jason knows what I'm talking about. You're standing outside, the doctor's coming around every morning, and it's their game plan. And we often don't think about it, but it's not their game plan, it's the Lord's game plan. And I can just remember the surgeons say we need to do this, and then Dr. Law, the intensivist cardiologist, said, no, we need to go in the cath lab. We need to put stents in. When we did that, he went from one of the sickest kids on that floor to one of the healthiest kids on that floor, and he came off ECMO. And rewind back a little bit, and they told us later on, they gave Andrew about a 5% chance to survive. The testimony that these little boys have, Andrew's now 10, he'll be 11 in May, the testimony that they have is going to be opening the doors, and I would like to think the testimony has already impacted a lot of people through our kids. So today, he played basketball. He's actually going to start tennis lessons in March. So he's active, and he loves playing PE football and all those things. And, you know, we just never take anything for granted. Mm. That's what we often say is you never know when it's going to impact your child or your grandchild. And we never want to take anything for granted. Just seeing and hearing about Brody running on the court playing basketball and seeing Andrew, you know, being active and playing with his buddies and everything. Not all the stories end that way, unfortunately. Mm. And it's something that we continue to strive to make the lives better of children that are born with CHD.
Well, let's talk about what somebody can do. So there's things that people can do, right? I mean, you know, if this is something, you watch this and you're like, man, I want to help.
Yeah. So we started back in 2016. We spent 2015 really planning the first year for a tournament that we do. It's called Casting and Catching. It's the largest charity fishing tournament in the nation. This will be our 10th year this year. And in that time period, over 9 years, the past nine, we've raised and donated $1.3 million to the Pediatric Congenital Heart Center at Children's of Alabama. And with that money has come CHD research. A full-time researcher has been put on staff. The research that's been done has actually made implications across not only in the United States but across the world. That research is spread out all over the world, which is really amazing. And this year, hopefully, the goal is $250,000 that we will raise, and will put us well over $1.5 million. Just another thing. You know, 40,000 kids in the United States born every year are born with CHD, congenital heart defects. It's the number one birth defect.
I was going to say that I didn't know the statistic, but if of all the birth defects I know about, mm-hmm. I felt like a heart defect was one of the most common that I could come up with.
One in 100 babies that are born are born with CHD. It could be from a VSD, hole in the heart, mm-hmm. which you hear about frequently, mm-hmm. to more complex issues like our children have.
That's so if somebody's listening, when is this tournament and all that taking place?
Yeah, so everything is on that same website. It's castingandcatching.org. It's pretty unique. Casting without the G, the letter N, and catching without the G.
It's Holly Pond language.
Yeah, we're talking full circle in the whole process here. So you can actually register for the tournament there. We're capping it at 200 boats, and I can let you know as of right now we're around 100 that have signed up. So it's going to go very quickly. Everything is on there. If you just want to donate straight to the floor, you can donate 24/7. If you say I'm not a fisherman, I really believe in this cause. I've been impacted by this. You can do that from that site as well. But remember, this carries a $15,000 grand prize. Now, I fished a lot of tournaments and growing up, and you guys have probably been around. There are not many amateur tournaments that have a $15,000 grand prize and pays out $45,000 in cash prizes. Mm. So this 100% of our sponsorship goes directly to the CVICU at Children's, and 100% of the restoration money goes back to the anglers. So it's a really, really unique setup. We talk about Bassmasters is heavily involved. The Bassmasters brings their weigh-in stage to the Elite Series walk across.
Oh, wow, that is cool.
And so they have been a huge, huge supporter of ours, and we can't thank them enough, and just all of our sponsors. But that website will get you all the information that you need. But just don't be that guy that gets left out because you waited to sign up, because it will go quickly.
Oh, we ain't going
to
be left out. We're going to win it with a Zebco 33.
So can we fish in a flat-bottom boat? Do we have to have a motor?
You don't have to have a motor. You just have to have a working live well, an aerated, aerated live well.
It can't work off the cooler.
But I think we can find a way for it.
Put a straw in there. blow it in there.
Hey, we have really brought about Coleman County, Blount County, Winston County right there, and you're talking about putting a straw in a live well. We've got them all covered there.
Well, I've got some live well stories, buddy.
Oh, my goodness.
Well, let's – you talk about giving glory to God through the surgeries and different things. Well, let's give a little glory to him right now. We're going to take our hats off, and we're going to go to James, the book of James. They've been in Ephesians, but
James.
Oh, James. James chapter 5, verses 19 and 20. My dear brothers and sisters, if anyone among you wanders away from the truth and is brought back, you can be sure that whoever brings the sinner back from wandering will save that person from death and bring about the forgiveness of many sins. Obviously, we can't forgive sins. Jesus alone forgives sins. We're not talking about that. But James is like, man, if you've got a brother out there that's running straight towards sin, running towards the things he shouldn't do, as mom would say, just grab him up by the nape of the neck and say, hey, buddy, you need to come back. Not in a judgmental way. Like, oh, you're worse than me. You shouldn't be doing that. But in a, hey, look, this ain't good for you. Let me help you. And I want to say this before y'all say what you'd like to say about it. God has used that man in my life to do that more, to live out James 5, what I just read, than as far as outside of family more than anybody. I mean, he was with me through thick and thin. I think the Lord used him in so many ways. And I say that. I mean, he's like my angel when I was building my testimony.
Work in progress.
I mean, buddy.
Building my testimony.
I went on the testimony tour for years. But I'm telling you, but the way that he did it, I wouldn't listen to anybody when I was as far away from the Lord as I could get. But he would never come to me in a judgmental way. He'd be like, man, hey, instead of doing that, why don't we go over here and do this? That's a bad idea. That sounds all right. We can go do that. And that's the way that I think he helped me to, and that's the way he lived out James 5, and I was a benefactor of him living it out. So if you're looking at this, you're like, well, I don't believe that. My testimony is, thank you.
Yeah. Speaking of that, we need to talk after the show. So
we done started it out again. Round two of the testimony.
We're building that testimony.
Yeah, there we go.
We were talking about our boys and the trials that they've gone through, and the Lord used that for me to draw me back. He got my attention real quick in May of 2015.
I bet.
You go from thinking, hey, everything's fine. I'm doing just fine. Mm-hmm. And that's how you build your testimony. You start with where I was. I is the bad part. You go to you or to him. Mm-hmm. The Lord used a lot of people in my life around that time, but there was no one probably more influential than that pastor up in Cherokee County, Zach Richards, that I was talking about. Mm-hmm. That we went to hear him preach in view of his call. He called me out of the blue and just asked me if I'd come speak at a Valentine's banquet. And I was like, sure, I'll do that. And the man didn't know me from Adam, put his arm around me and said, son, I'm here to disciple you. And that's what he did. And let me tell you, I have never learned more than having someone that I was having to be accountable to.
Yeah.
And that's, that's what this is. It's accountability.
It's really good that you say that, because Philip just talked about when we were building our testimony. But now that we are both in a stage of life, we would say the second half of our life, right? We're downhill from here.
Yeah, I doubt I got more ahead of me than I got behind. Especially because that testimony building.
Because that building took a lot out of you.
It sure did.
But nowadays, I'll have something on my mind, and Philip will call and say, man, you know what? Lord's been working me on this. And it's like I'll get hit with a ton of bricks. I'm like, oh, that's exactly where I've been. So it's great that maybe I helped him to start with, but now, since we went through all that, now we help each other. He helps me just as much as maybe I helped him. I toted him around a little bit.
Now, that was just a little bit.
Physically.
I think, too, our preacher, Stephen Barber, has said it numerous times, and it's always stuck in my head. You're either about to go in a trial, you're in a trial, or you're coming out of a trial. And a trial can be and look in many different ways. Trials for us were when our sons were diagnosed with CHD. trial could be a drug addiction or alcohol. It could be a lot of different things and look a lot of different ways. But the accountability piece, I think that what we're saying here is nobody is immune to that.
Nobody.
Mm-mm.
And living for the Lord, being a believer, knowing where our future is and our hope is, whether we're on the downside of age or, you know, how many years it may be, nobody knows but him. And I think accountability among people, there's the through our whole families that have been involved in this tournament, you know, I think there's just been a peace and a hand of God, whether the outcome, whatever the outcome was, that has really played a huge, important role in all of our lives, for sure.
All right, let's do your favorite thing. Let's hit the word game.
Awesome.
Jason, you would be willing to go first?
All right, yeah, we can do that. They
will
go
to
Birmingham
today.
Period.
Okay.
Well, there we go. Period ends.
I was
going
to hit a because, but you know, it's like, you know what?
Well,
that's
going.
A good locked up sentence right there.
Yeah, that actually made a lot of logical sense there too, didn't it?
And I think it's true.
Someone will be going.
Yeah, sure. That's you. Yeah.
Right now, they're going down the I-65 South, headed that way. Drew, we want you to be our honorary leader on the goodest bologna. Bologna. So I don't know why I want to say. I want to.
Going back.
It's that battle between Holly Pond.
And this was not a customer. What do we call a follower request, right? We had someone from the
show.
It was
on a live.
Yep.
We've been doing that 30-day live challenge, and somebody wanted a gooder bologna, 60-second story. So, Drew, will you lead us off with that?
I sure will. Yeah. Here we go. So, if you've never been to Hollywood, Alabama, there's an old country store there called Shorty Manchin's Grocery Store. And when you paint the picture of it, you walk in and don't judge it by the outside because it's got a lot of age on it, right? But when you walk in, your world changes. Old rickety floors. I mean, you look over in the case, and there is the bologna or the whatever you said earlier. I don't even know if I can re-say that. They have a bologna sandwich called the Johnny Mac, and it is about that thick, and you can have pepper jack cheese on it, whatever cheese you want on it, lettuce, tomato, mayonnaise, everything else. I'm here to tell you, you have not lived until you've had the Johnny Mac sandwich from Shorty Manchin's Grocery Store in Hollywood, Alabama.
10 Boom. Seconds remaining.
He's still got, hey, you can do it easy when it's that good.
All right, you ready for me?
I am.
All right, here we go. During the summertime when I was growing up, I stayed with my mama, and she kept me. And the one rule is I had to go out of the house after I had breakfast, and I could come back at lunch. And you know how hot it was back then. I'd be out there playing barefooted, getting burnt, doing the whole thing, and I'd come in for lunch just starving to death. Well, I had heard about potted meat and some of these other exotic meats that you get out of a can, and I said, I'm not eating that anymore. I'm not eating that, period. And my mama knew that I didn't want a bologna sandwich, but she said, we're having bologna sandwiches today for lunch, and you're going to like it. I said, I'm not eating it. I'm not eating that mystery meat sandwich. And she said, well, I tell you what, you're going to take at least one bite. And she had, in her large iron skillet, she had fried some bologna. And then she had that white bread, mayonnaise, lettuce, a piece of cheese. And she put that bologna on there, handed it to me. I took one bite of it, and I said, that's the goodest bologna sandwich I ever had.
Best there one ever.
That's what I'm talking about.
All right, ready?
Ready when you are.
I'm going to go. All right, so we have been doing some rabbit hunting up in Cherokee County, which Jason's talked a little bit about Cherokee County, and my son's been going with me. And when you go rabbit hunting, you eat, or you don't eat, you walk and you get hungry. I mean, you burn calories, and he's telling me the whole time, he's saying, Daddy, I'm hungry, I'm starving. I said, son, we're going to go to Mark's Groceries after this. I know Mark had all the fixings for a bologna sandwich. He had the old rusty knife. You got to have to cut it with.
That's right.
He's got the bologna. He's got the cheese. Got the mayonnaise and the bread. So we go to Mark's Groceries after, and Mark cuts that bologna, and it's all crooked and sideways. And Covey eats two of them. Well, we go rabbit hunting the next week. First thing he wants to know, Daddy, we going back to Mark's Groceries?
Mm-hmm.
The best bologna sandwich you'll eat is Mark's Groceries in Cherokee County, Alabama.
Mm. Have to try that one out.
Yep.
All right. So I've got a two-parter. One is the best bologna, and the other is probably the worst bologna. The best came from the Hulaco General Store. A man named Philip Kelso owned that. It actually blew away in the tornado in 2011 that went up through southern Morgan County. So it doesn't exist anymore. You can't go there, so you can't prove that I'm right or wrong, but I'm telling you I'm right. He didn't have a rusty knife, but he had one of those nice machines, you know, the Kramer meat slicer from Seinfeld. He had one of those things. So he would cut the best bologna. We lived on that through the blizzard of 93. Now, the worst bologna is not something that I had. It's something that my mother-in-law had. They're from New Orleans, so they're not accustomed to, as we were discussing, Alabama round steak. So she goes to Jack's the day before my wife and I get married in Holly Pond. That's where our wedding is going to be. And she gets a bologna biscuit as advertised on their sign. Well, she didn't like it very much. She looked at it and said, "This ain't no bologna. This is a weenie biscuit."
You ain't gonna fly in New Orleans.
Oh, no.
Like cutting a sausage form
it was,
or something.
Yeah, it was cut some kind of weird sausage. It did not look like your typical fried bologna.
Goodness gracious.
It was not Mall Mall's bologna, let's put it that way.
I don't want it. I mean, I like hot dogs, but I don't want bologna in a hot dog form. Or is that is hot dog bologna in a hot dog form?
Again, the world may never know. You're in the world of mystery meats, and that's a world that I don't live in.
They even throw in vein of sausages. I mean, where does that even play?
My boy,
throw a little veg all on it, some potatoes.
Oh, okay, the best thing,
we talked about fishing outdoorsmen. When you go out and it's cold, and you have vein of sausage in there, and you pop it open, it's jail. You know, it's become jail.
Mm-hmm.
Oh yeah, that's when they're even better.
Slurp that jelly off.
Hey, and when you get good enough, you graduate to barbecue.
Yeah, I like the barbecue.
Let me tell you one truth.
It's carnivore.
You see
diet.
Philip sitting there eating barbecue vines. Know that I am real hungry. Like I have hit a point of hunger that is.
Yeah, and see, you said it the right way. Vienna sausages.
Vainers.
Vainers. Vainers, yeah.
Only Vainers. City folks say Vienna.
Viennas.
How did I say it? Vienna? Vienna.
No, it's got to have the long I on the front.
Vienna.
Vienna.
How do normal people say it?
Vienners. Normal people say Vienners.
Normal people look at it and bypass it.
yeah.
But you throw a saltine cracker on it.
Man. And then a little hot sauce.
Oh, listen, yeah. I ate potted meat. Like they were going to quit making it until somebody told me what it was.
Did you? Mm.
Because, man, I would put on white bread, and I'd take that potted meat, and I'd spread it on that white bread, and I love mustard on that. Case that bad boy up and just go to town. And that's why I say, do you know what
Don't
you're eating?
Don't you tell covering your chain what it's made of, because, hey, that boy will flat chew it.
I'm just telling you, I ate it, buddy. And so somebody said, do you know what you're eating? I said, potted meat.
So when you're young, you
know what potted meat is. And I was like, no, I don't know what potted meat is.
And when you get older, it keeps you up at night. Yeah.
Well, I'm hungry.
I am too.
Too much bologna talk. We gotta go.
Too much bologna talk.
And we've been talking about fishing. So
I either need to go fishing or I need to go get something to eat, one of the two.
Or both.
But we can take vein of sausages and put them in the
while
boat.
While we
go
fish.
Do both.
Now we're
exactly
talking.
Exactly right.
Drew, now you're talking.
Sounds
That's
like
right.
a plan. We're going to get out of here. This is Hayden Outbound Podcast. I'm Philip.
I'm Shane.
I'm Jason.
And I'm Drew.
We'll see you guys next time.